Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your call. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited because we have another special guest this week. I'd like to introduce Melinda Guyal. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm delighted to be here.
Great. Melinda is a senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, and also a marriage and family therapist. We're delighted to have you here, Melinda.
Thank you. And I've been looking through the week at the sort of the marriage of spirituality and psychotherapy.
Great.
Realizing as I've been looking at it that it's kind of as big as Zen is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's, uh-huh. There's just so much to, well, I want to say both subjects, but they're also really one subject for me.
Yes.
Because they're pretty much inseparable.
Yeah.
Particularly in the way I do both spiritual practice and my psychotherapy practice.
Great. Can you say more about how you see them as one?
Well, in particular in the way that we do, you know, we do at the monastery the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work.
Yeah.
And it guides one through the process of self-discovery that is both psychotherapeutic and spiritual.
Yes.
So it's really, it's like, I can't say that this part is therapy and this part is spiritual.
Yes.
And therapy might be kind of a misnomer because it can be taken to imply that there's something that needs to be fixed.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, at the monastery and with the There Is Nothing Wrong With You practice, there isn't anything that needs to be fixed.
There's nothing to be fixed.
Nothing to be fixed.
We're fine exactly as we are.
Yes. And the realization of that, the sort of taking that on and walking around in it is probably the greatest gift we can give ourselves and other people.
Yes. Yes, that's my experience as well.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Melinda, let me give out the phone number, and if
okay.
People want to join us to talk about spiritual practice and therapy,
great.
They're more than welcome. We have a toll-free number in North America for U.S. and Canada. You can reach us at 866-613-1612. Again, that's toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. We're talking about spiritual practice and therapy today with Melinda Guyal. And if you're further away than North America, we also want to hear from you. And you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. Phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you today. So, Melinda, you've mentioned that There Is Nothing Wrong With You work a couple times.
Yes.
Can you say more about that and the sort of relationship with therapy or the context within that?
Yeah, well, as I hope most listeners know, Sherry wrote a book a number of years ago called Regardless of What You Were Taught to Believe, There Is Nothing Wrong With You.
Yes.
And at about the same time as the book came out, or maybe a little bit later, a retreat, an eight-day retreat, was crafted. And over the last 12 to 14 years, that retreat has been really, I think, very elegantly refined into showing people in a very precise, step-by-step way how we got ourselves, how we got into being conditioned beings, and how it is not necessary for us to continue to live in that conditioned way.
Yeah.
And when I say conditioned, we could also substitute suffering or egocentric karmic conditioning or a lot of the different things that we use to express essentially how we walk around being dissatisfied all the time.
Yes.
And the crafting of that retreat gives people the sort of, it wakes us up to how we really can be the masters of our own experience.
Yes.
And step out of the misery that so many of us live in.
Yeah.
And for me, that fits with what I always intended as a psychotherapist and what I intend for the people I work with as a psychotherapist, that
yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to come to me and have me give you the answers for your life, but we can work together and you can... what can be reflected for you is your own adequacy and your own power. Yeah, to be a really content human being.
It's exciting.
It is. I just am totally thrilled by it.
Yeah, to be reflected that you're adequate to your life.
Yes.
What a gift.
And very specifically that there truly is nothing wrong with you.
Yes.
I think that when we therapists are able to come from the place of deeply knowing that
yes.
about ourselves and the people we work with,
yes.
it's contagious.
Yes. Melinda, I'm excited to say that we have a caller on the line.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Melinda. How are you doing?
Hey, Paul.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
So it's really two ideas. One kind of flows from the other. I realized within the last month or two that for a long time I've had it in my head that getting married would make my life happy.
Mm.
And when I kind of realized that and realized that there was sort of it was based on some beliefs that maybe weren't true,
mm-hmm.
it's been kind of a shock.
Aha. So there you are, kind of moving along with the understanding and the belief, as you say, that getting married is going to kind of take care of everything.
Yep, pretty much.
And somehow, and I'd be curious to know more about how, You started suspecting that maybe this was a belief and not necessarily a truth.
I think one of the things I noticed was that my friends around me who were married would be talking about some of the challenges that they had.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I realized that they still struggled with things like loneliness.
Yeah.
Or you know, self-esteem or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And
but at least for them, getting married hadn't solved all of the problems that you may have been anticipating might happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had one friend in particular that really kind of spelled out for me some of the challenges that he was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, like, I actually don't have it so bad right now.
So have you perhaps moved over to the other side that I'd be better off if I didn't get married?
I've been playing with that for a while.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, like, whether I'm married or not is sort of a different discussion than being happy or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that the external circumstances really don't have a whole lot to do with the internal experience, or don't have to determine it.
Yeah, don't have to determine it. I think that's well put.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just things would be different, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And in a way, in the way we look at it with the there is nothing wrong with you work, what would be different would be the content of the process.
Yeah.
That, as we say, wherever you go, there you are.
Right.
Whether it's with the wedding band or without.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it also kind of strikes me that in some ways it could be more complicated. I don't know about this, but the thought is that while in a relationship, it could be more complicated to do some of this kind of introspection and learning than being in a relationship.
And so does it feel like you're getting information now internally that if you were to be in a relationship, that that might make things more difficult for you? I wanted to make sure.
Possibly. You know, on the other hand, you know, being in relationship, then there's a whole other set of experiences that I can have and that I can learn from.
So
it could be kind of a wash.
Yeah, and for me, one of the nifty things about relationships, whether one is in it or out of it, is that we get to project no matter what and to really learn from our projections. Does that make sense?
I've heard that before. I wonder what you have in mind.
Just that, again, the world reflects our process. So if we're in relationship and something's going on with another person, it's a chance for us to see what's going on for us.
Yeah, and I guess where I get I can look at the things that I get really intense about with somebody else, and see that as a clue for something for me to look at.
Exactly, and how might that be an internal process? How might there be the experience internally of whatever it is that goes on that you see with an external person?
So here's kind of a choice point that I'm at. Is so I haven't dated anybody in a while, and I'm thinking, you know, I'd like that to happen. So I'm thinking that one of the ways, I mean, I go out and do stuff and whatnot, but one of the ways that I could be more likely to date somebody would be to go online, because there's these websites, and kind of see who I end up meeting. But then there's another side of me that says, no, that's not really, like, that's too willful, or that's too forceful. And I should just sort of, like, keep going about my life, and if I meet somebody, great, and if I don't, then that's just how it is.
So it sounds like the story is that if you actually make a movement in the direction of finding a person to date, that somehow you're going against what you really should do, which is just if somebody comes along, that's what'll be intended for you.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, so it sort of feels like a duality.
Sounds a lot like one.
And there I am.
Right. And do you find yourself swinging back and forth to kind of the way dualities seem to happen, that for a while you'll really consider the online exploration, and then for a while you'll really just feel like, oh, I should probably just sit and wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I do see that.
Yeah. So again, an interesting process to explore.
Yeah, and like what I'm thinking these days is that I might just, how would I put it? So I've been not doing the online thing and seeing how that is. So I might do the online thing with awareness and sort of see how that plays out.
Yeah. And the big part of that is with awareness, isn't it?
Yeah, and just kind of see what I can learn from the process.
Yes. And it's reminding me so much of what Sherry will often suggest, which is, you know, decide when we're in a duality that for one time you'll do it and the next time you won't. And the next time you will, without leaving it up to ego to decide which I'm going to do when, but simply do one and then the other and one and then the other for whatever period of time.
At a high level, what do you think that does?
What's your best guess?
I'm thinking that, like, a lot of energy goes into resisting something, and then it becomes unknown and kind of rife to story. Whereas if I just go do it, then it's no longer unknown. It becomes something.
Ah, yeah. So as long as you don't do it, it's in there for conditioning to do whatever it wants with stories.
Yeah.
And once you do it, you'll have a sense for yourself of whether it's something that works for you.
Yeah.
Is that kind of it?
Yeah, I bet that's a piece of it.
Sounds like an interesting workshop, as we would say.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for calling, Paul.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We have a special guest today, Melinda Guyal, who's a senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and also a and family therapist. Melinda, I particularly appreciated when you were talking about how the external circumstances don't have to determine our internal experience.
That's one of my favorites when I'm having an experience that is pretty much exactly the same on Monday as it is on Tuesday.
Yes.
And then my internal experience of it could be misery on one day and joy on the next.
Yes.
Yeah, it kind of really puts a test to the suggestion that it's the outside that's doing it to me.
Yes, yes. And we have another caller on the line, Melinda.
Right.
I'd like to welcome Morgan from San Francisco. You're
Hi.
On Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi. Hi. I'm going to thought about something different after hearing a lot of that last conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in different Eastern practices a long time, and specifically with Sherry for, I guess, 8 years. And I have come to a place in my life from my living circumstances and my work circumstances where there's not a lot to distract me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of contact with other people, and I'm pretty much, you know, handling things myself. And I've gotten to a point where, I mean, well, I'll say what I find myself thinking is that even doing this practice is another way of being too isolated.
It's
another way, and that I need to do, you know, I need to stop that, because it's another way of being just back internalized with myself. You know, what we do, you know, we're looking at our own reactions, our own sensations, projections.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's one thing I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm really wondering if I'm using it to actually not be in life in a different way I would feel better about. If that makes any sense.
Well, I think I have a sense of what it is that you're looking at, which is wondering. So you're sort of seeing. It sounds like your life has become kind of small, would you say?
Kind of what?
Small,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And wondering, it's sort of looking at this practice, and you've been doing it for about 8 years, as perhaps something that is contributing to that smallness.
Yes.
And whether if you weren't doing it
right,
or found something else to do, that you might actually have more contentment in your life.
Yeah, because the practice is such an inward-focused activity, which already I'm having too much of, just because of the circumstances of my life.
Yeah, I have a curiosity of whether you go to any of the, the sitting groups.
Yeah, I go every week.
And what's your experience there?
Very good.
How so?
I definitely feel, supported when I do get into a dialogue.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's a good question, Melinda.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm...
I think, I'm, you know, when you say that, I realize what I'm really saying, it's just being alone so much. And then adding on to it by getting all involved with my perception and, you know, just as I go through my day.
Ah.
And
yeah,
it seems
yeah.
like, you know, that's adding something that I don't need.
Yeah, it sounds like, and you'll have to see for yourself if this is so, but it sounds like conditioning has got you kind of caught in a little box of stories.
Listening?
Conditioning.
Conditioning, oh, yes.
Has got you in a little box of stories. And the smallness may have to do, and again, it's going to be your own experience telling you, but the smallness has to do with not having much space from those stories.
Uh-huh.
Is that?
Hmm. Well, that very much connects to, you know, another part of this for me is, you know, really... being so more in not having a good time right now and feeling negative and feeling, you know, there's not a lot of joy.
Yeah, yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And so at least part of you, there's a looking for how do I get out of this because I'm not feeling good.
Right. That's exactly it. and partly, I'm thinking... Or rather, one part of me is thinking, and it's very difficult, you know, because I, like I said, I don't have a lot of distraction right now
mm-hmm.
from myself, and in looking at things, somehow things feel much more raw, and it's very scary for me to kind of say this to myself, but I have this fear that I really don't want to do the work of consciousness, that with all the years I've done stuff, and this has been such a huge part of my identity and self-identity.
Yes.
That, you know, I don't want to take this on, you know, that I don't want to have to, it seems so overwhelming, the negative and the patterns, and it just seems like too much. And that's scary to me to think, because then it means I'll just kind of acquiesce to this kind of way of being.
Aha, so is it that you're looking at if you decide that maybe practice isn't the thing you want to be doing now,
mm-hmm.
that what you're going to be stuck with is kind of a miserable way of life and no way out?
Partly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that very is... scary possibility, you know, I don't really want to do this practice.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's like when you finally can't... what's the word? The realization of something or the realness of it, the honesty is so there. You can't explain your way out of it. You can't pretend. You can't go, you know, use something to escape. I mean, and that's what I feel I've come up against. And it's kind of overwhelming because, like I said, so much of my time and my identity, both to myself and I think to some others who know me, has been about being... you know, meditation and a practice and perceptive and all. And now I find I'm so steeped in the negative and states that are not fun.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I feel, you know, maybe I have just been kidding myself all along and I kind of I've hit this dead end here, you know, there's nowhere else to go.
The bottom of the pit, it sounds like.
And, like, there's that awareness, and sometimes it seems very honest to say, you know what, no, I can't do this, it's too much.
Yeah.
Or, you know, here I am again trying yet again, and I'm always going to come back to these places.
Ah, yeah.
And it feels like, why bother?
Yep.
So on the one hand, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's interesting. I see now, on one hand, that feels like a relief, but on another hand, it scares the hell out of me.
And what feels like a relief is maybe just giving up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a couple of things occur to me about it, and again, it's just going to be a matter of this is what arises for me, and I don't know if this really applies to you. The first is something that someone said once, which was seeing without compassion is self-hate.
Seeing without compassion is self-hate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So seeing seeing what we're doing, if it's not grounded, if the seeing isn't grounded in compassion, then we're stuck with self-hate.
Well, that fits very much. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing which is connected with that is a commercial that I, you know, of course, can't resist because I am so such an advocate of the there is nothing wrong with you work, is that you consider doing the retreat?
I have done that one.
Uh-huh.
A long time ago.
Long time ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, I don't know, you know, what your experience was or what you
it
remember.
It was very good.
But it's a, for most people, it's a source, it's a way to tap into that compassion.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when you say, when you said the first thing,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know, it resonates in me and the feeling as well, of course.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Awareness without.
There we are seeing
passion
really
is
self-hate. Clearly, but we've got conditioning on our shoulders giving us opinions about what we're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not pleasant.
No. No, and I think, you know, the word you used, of feeling, you know, small, things have gotten too small, and that's actually how I've described my experience to myself.
Yes.
And it gets very scary, but are you suggesting it's because of this, the lack of compassion?
Well, it sounds like what you're describing is kind of a self-beating situation. And that doesn't happen when compassion's around.
Right, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess, I just kind of went into a place, I just went into a thought or a memory of, which happens daily to me, but, you know, that with this in mind, you know, that that without compassion,
mm-hmm.
and it's, what's scary is I'm seeing how strong and overwhelming the self-hate and conditioning are right now, or, you know, how big a role they're playing.
There's a reason they get called worthy opponents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they make us really build our compassion muscle.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what do I do? How do I? Because it gets very scary.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why. And it's kind of odd now at this point talking with you because, you know, it's certainly, I'll say this to myself, and this is maybe another example of not being, I'll say, you know, I know this.
Yes.
You know, I know these setups. I know, and yet I'm not, you're not doing it or you're not doing something to deal with it.
Yeah.
That it's all on me.
And there's a big clue that the voice is saying you.
Mm-hmm.
That there's somebody standing outside of you in your mind pointing at you and being kind of accusatory.
Very. How is it different or is it different if the voice says I?
What's your experience of that?
It feels very, then it's definitely feels like it's me because it's I.
Yeah. And what I find for myself, and again, it's a place to look, is that sometimes the I feels as though it's my heart speaking, and sometimes it feels like it's someone who's just gotten a lecture from self-hate.
Uh-huh.
For instance, I can't believe I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of those lectures from self-hate.
Okay. So something about, you know, I missed that opportunity, and it was, you know, and then there's a lot of pain following that thought.
It kind of sounds like, yeah, I mean, that, yeah.
Huh.
You're on to it. Yeah.
Well, this is just the kind of thing that there's fear about not, without, left to myself, which I am, and when these things come up, as they will,
yes,
I'm gonna fold again, or I'll just go unconscious in the face of it.
Yes, and that's such a strong encouragement for practicing with other people, because the whole process of conditioning can maintain itself so much more easily when it doesn't have any exposure.
Exactly.
With exposure, it gets diluted.
Yeah.
Dilute, as in, you know, somewhat disempowered.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Morgan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest today, Melinda Guyal, who's a senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and also a marriage and family therapist. We're going to take a break here, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on our second segment of today's Open Air show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Today we have a special guest, Melinda Guyal. And the phone lines are open here if you'd like to join our conversation. You can reach us toll-free in North America. That number is 866-613-1612. Give us a call and we'd love to hear from you. Melinda, a couple things occurred to me during that last conversation.
Mm-hmm.
First thing was the courage to call and to look.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Could you repeat what you said, Michael? I didn't quite hear you.
Yeah, sure. I was impressed with Morgan's courage to call and show up, look, and participate.
Yes.
It's just so moving for me and inspiring when people call in.
Well, and it feels like that's a really big piece of kind of what she and I were looking at, which is that when you're practicing with other people,
Yeah. There's
so much wonderful opportunity to get support. And I right there with you that by calling and talking about the issues she's facing, probably a lot of people out there are gaining support from it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, and I will be the first to say I am.
Oh, yes.
And the other thing that occurred to me about Morgan's call, along the same lines, and I've heard Sherry talk about this so eloquently, about one precious life to save.
Yes.
I have at least one precious life to save.
Yeah.
Whose suffering that I know so well.
Yes. And I am as worthy of saving that life as everyone else on the planet is of saving their lives.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's always because conditioning will spin it, you know, as self-centered.
Yes.
And, you know, perhaps the biggest gift I can give the world is awakening myself.
Yeah, because it definitely ripples out and has an impact on pretty much the world.
Yes. When I'm taking care of myself, I'm available to life.
Yeah.
And as you said also, the there is nothing wrong with you work is really, as you were talking about with Morgan, it's just step by step through the fundamentals of how it all works.
Yeah, it's something that I look at a lot because I have the opportunity of facilitating the retreat periodically.
Yes.
And it's just so... It seems so magical the way it lays things out, because it's not like other therapies in the way I see it that have sort of a model that we then fit everything into.
Yes.
But it has processes that we look at and that we can see how they apply in our own lives with our own unique content.
Yes.
So really being able to see how very different we are given the content and how incredibly alike given the process. And it's just such a such an incredible tool for self-discovery.
Yes. Can you say more about that distinction between content and process, which seems so fundamental to this practice?
Yeah, well, I think we've touched on it in both conversations, going back to Paul's in particular, where we can think that it's the externals, it's whether or not I get married, that are going to have an impact on how I feel about myself and how I feel about the world around me.
Yes.
And yet, when we are able to really explore from process of how he actually mentioned duality, of how first I'm in the place where should I go online, and then I'm in the place of, no, I should just wait, that the dating is the content, but the process is that being pushed back and forth by conditioning from one side of that duality or process to the other.
Yes.
And the wonderful how we do anything is how we do everything.
Yeah.
That once we begin to see that going back and forth, I can see that I do it about my job, I can see that I do it about my parents, I can see that I do it about whatever, and begin to really understand the movement regardless of the content.
Yes. So when I'm identified with conditioning, it seems like a really important question about whether I should be married or not married, or whether I should do online dating or wait for somebody to show up.
Yes.
And as you're describing it, we begin to see that same process with different content.
Yes.
That back and forth duality.
Yeah, and that I'm not satisfied at any point in the process.
Wow.
There's never a sense of, ah, yes, now my life's the way it should be. Now I'm really content with my life.
Right.
We always have that movement back to the other side, whatever the other side is.
Yes, yes. And so conditioning will hold out that satisfaction as kind of a carrot in front of us.
Yeah.
As we're running back and forth from one side of the duality to the other.
Yeah, the great if only.
If only.
Yeah.
If only this relationship. If only this marriage. If only this job.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, and when it happens enough and we actually get the if onlys.
Yes.
And we get the inheritance, or we get the partner that we've always wanted, or we get the new car.
Yes.
Sooner or later, and in my experience it's often sooner.
Yes.
Like, ah, this wasn't quite it.
Yes.
There must be more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm reminded of the four causes of suffering, as you're talking, of getting what you want and not being satisfied with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I'm also reminded along those same lines, I think I read about a sort of a psychological study once where they asked people who were buying new cars.
Uh-huh.
How long they felt they would be satisfied with it.
Yes.
And when they, you know, for example, let's say they said 1 year, and they checked in with them, you know, only 6 months later, and they were not satisfied with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It seems so true until we start paying attention to it.
Well, and that's such an important piece of it, because in the paying attention, I mean, we can and seems like lots of folks do just go through life in that place of, well, it'll be the next thing, and then you know, that's not satisfying, and then the next thing, and that wears off, and then the next thing, and all the way, you know, to the end.
Yeah.
But the paying attention allows us to see, again, to have that chance to see, oh, you know, I got the relationship, and that wasn't quite it. I got the car, and maybe there's something going on here that I could look at a little more closely. And that's where I really appreciate that we focus so much on process.
Yes. Yeah.
How do I do discontent?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when we're focused on the process, then it seems, in my experience, the content becomes less believable.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because we start discovering that we have within us the possibility of being content regardless.
Yes.
Whether I'm driving my old 79 Datsun or a brand new Mercedes, that life is terrific.
Yes, yes. What a gift!
Yeah.
Let me give out the phone number again. Phone lines are open here. We have Linda Guyall, Senior Monk, with us today, talking about spiritual practice and therapy. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can reach us toll-free in North America at 866-613-1612. Melinda, as we're talking, I'm just reminded of the key, and the name of the key is willingness.
Mm-hmm. Got a nice ring to it.
Isn't it great?
Terry's first book.
Yes. And I remember from the email class that just finished a couple months ago, Sherry talking about the reason that we're successful is that we just don't give up.
Yeah.
It's so inspiring to me.
Yes. We just keep putting one foot in front of the other, either literally or metaphorically.
Yes.
Yeah. And showing up.
Yes. Yes, as you talked about with Morgan earlier about practicing with a group of people and showing up.
Yeah, yeah, and I was just thinking about Morgan, too, in that showing up for ourselves in the way of just continually looking and not, you know, not wholeheartedly believing what the stories inside our heads are telling us, but being willing to put a little wedge of disbelief in there and
yes.
Kind of be allies for ourselves.
Yes, yes. Getting to that place where our relationship with ourselves is so strong that we really trust ourselves.
We really help ourselves.
Trust ourselves.
Trust ourselves.
And that we know we're our own best friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's really huge, isn't it?
Oh, it is huge. It is huge. And I've been noticing for myself that I'm attempting to put myself in places in life where I'm required to participate and show up.
Aha. Could you say a little bit more about that, Michael?
Well, I can, as we were talking about with Morgan, you know, when I'm colluding with conditioning, I'm sort of not stepping into opportunities.
And so when you say colluding with conditioning, could you expand on that a little bit?
Yes, sure. My favorite one is I'm too busy and I have too much going on.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I can't do that. I would love to help and I can't because
yes.
I'm too busy and so I'm in that story of
yeah.
too busy and not enough time, which when I'm paying attention, I realize takes up a lot of time and energy.
That because that's all going on inside the whole time you're trying to get stuff done.
Yes.
Too busy, I don't have enough time.
Yes.
Yeah, and then when you, so essentially it sounds like saying no to life.
Yes.
So an offer comes along, and no, I'm too busy, there's not enough time.
Yes.
And there's also all that energy of resisting what life is offering you.
Yes,
and
yes.
And then discovering that when you're not colluding with conditioning, when you're not believing the, I'm too busy, I don't have enough time, that perhaps you do have enough time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's fascinating. I was reading a book talking a little bit about time and time management, and that a lot of our language around time is really a not enough language.
Ah.
Which
yeah.
which I hadn't really noticed before. And it seems to be
scarcity.
True in my experience.
Yeah, one of those places of scarcity.
Yes.
Along with money and...
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing that he pointed out was that another moment is showing up every moment.
Mm. Ah.
So it's so funny.
Yeah. 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 And there aren't enough moments.
Yes.
Conditioning would have us believe.
Yes.
Which has us missing the moments that... that belief just went through in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
It really gets to be fun, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. I mean, when you start paying attention, you have to laugh at the kind of knots that I can twist myself up into.
Yeah, and such an important piece of it, as we were talking about with Morgan, is not beating yourself up for doing what humans do when we're caught in conditioning.
Yes.
It's just what we
yes.
do.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I just remembered, as you mentioned that, Sherry's recent email, I think it was last month or so, about the reason that spiritual practice can be perceived as hard is that we're doing another practice.
Yeah.
And it's called conditioning.
Wasn't that great?
That was great.
Yep.
That was great.
Yeah, I'm putting all of my energy into resisting life. And so when I try to pull that energy over into really being kind to myself, it's too hard.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Melinda, we're near the end of the show, and we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Dave from New Hampshire. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Is it Dave, did you say?
Yes.
Thanks. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. I had a question. I saw, my wife and I, Liz, saw Sherry at Cambridge at the Quaker Meeting House, and I had a question that I never got to ask. She talked about the whole concept of being here in the now and being in the moment, and it's one of those yes but questions where that's all wonderful, but there is this future. There are 401ks and colleges and houses to buy and trips to plan, and how do you be here now and be solely in the moment and still plan for this future that I understand is not promised to anyone, but yet should be planned for because you don't want to be caught
mm-hmm.
without.
Uh-huh. And so it sounded like the suggestion might be don't plan?
Well, no. I know there's a way to do it. I you know, again, I'm fairly new to this, and I did hear her talk, and, you know, being in the moment, being in the now, yet almost seemed to, and I know she wasn't saying this, but I'm trying to bridge the gap between being in the moment and being in the now, and that's all you have, and that's really all there is in reality. There is no future, and there is no past. There's just now, uh-huh. but yet you do have these things that you want to do, you know, should you have a future, and how do you bridge that gap?
Right, right. And I have to tell you, this may feel like a digression, but I'm just really interested that as you started, you identified that you're yes but.
Yes.
Yeah, which is just an interesting process to, it sounds like one that you're probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
That something will be presented and then there's a response from you that comes out yes but.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, wait. You know, the be here now, be in the moment, yeah, that's great. But,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you end up with nothing in your 401k and no money for your kids for college. And so you have to get from this moment into those moments. And yeah. how do you do that?
Yeah, and what I love is that the yes, but, I mean, you're really paying attention, which says to me that you're really in the moment when you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
you hear yourself do it.
Yep.
And for me, the same thing applies to planning, is that isn't it possible to be in the moment while you're planning?
Okay, that's true.
I mean, you're right there with the numbers on the 401k, or you're right there with the trip to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. So you're not wasting the moment by being in the moment planning the future.
Does it feel to you as though you are? That would be one of the kind of tests. Because we might, you know, there might be a tendency to spend a lot of time fantasizing about trips rather than being in the moment.
True.
Or there might be, you know, let's do this. Okay, let's plan it. All of which could be in the moment. But it's very much a check in with that attention to see for yourself where you're at.
So as long as you're in the moment planning for the future, you're not wasting the moment by in the future, I guess. Is that?
Well, and that's one of the, you know, check it out. Check it out and see what your experience of it is.
Okay.
Where do you realize, you know, is it that there is some process of leaving the moment to plan, or does it feel as though you're in the moment planning? That's a real subtle kind of distinction to focus on.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'm new at all of this concept, all of these concepts, rather, and so I know there was more to it, and I'm not saying Sherry was implying that, you know, you were ruining the present by planning for the future, but I didn't get a chance to get it fleshed out a little bit in the short time we had there in that talk. So
yeah, well, I hope you'll be able to, you know, to plug in more as you go along, because it sounds like it's a practice that may be of interest to you, and that you're definitely exploring on your own.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Great. Thank you very much for calling.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Dave. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we are at the end of our hour here.
Aha. Well,
it's been great to have
really
you on the
enjoyed
air.
Enjoyed this, Michael. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we've been talking today with Melinda Guyal, senior monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and also a marriage and family therapist. And it's been a great hour.
Yes, it has.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Good night.